Welcome to another edition of Fight Opinion Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Thaler, known as Whale Dog, and I am joined by none other, surprise, surprise, none other than Zach Arnold, the proprietor of FightOpinion.com. Hello, Zach.
What's going on?
Well, as usual, a lot going on, a lot of things moving, and a lot of things to discuss.
Well, let me just stop you right there.
Yeah.
If you think it's difficult for us to keep up with what's going on, imagine what it's like inside UFC.
You know what I was going to talk about tonight, Zach, but maybe we'll get into it later. Did you see the crazy 2-on-1 Russian MMA cage fight with a 3-second double knockout?
No, I have not.
Maybe we can talk about that later. That is only in Russia. It's amazing. Let's talk about it now real quick. There's a cage fight. There's two guys on one side, one guy alone on the other. It's in, of course, in Russia, because where else, right?
So you're saying a handicap match?
I'm saying like these two guys are gonna beat up one guy in a inside a cage with gloves and, you know, their fight trunks. Obviously not sanctioned, but an MMA event. The bell rings. The first guy runs over. Something happens. The second guy comes close, trips or goes for, I can't remember exactly. Second guy gets close. The guy who's fighting alone clocks the second guy, knocks him cold. This is like 1 second into the fight. The other guy gets up. He clocks him, knocks him cold. Like 3 to 5 seconds, he's got a double KO and he's beat up 2 men in the cage. Only in Russia. But nevertheless, let's get on point because that's fun. There's a lot of stuff going on in the UFC and there's a lot of mixed messages. And there's a lot of compare and contrast, and how can two opposite statements be true at the same time? And I want to delve into that if you got a minute for me.
Well, I think there's a lot to talk about when it comes to all their shows, their international expansion, and God knows what's going on with their drug testing and everything. It seems like the world is collapsing.
Let me do a compare and contrast for you. Let me start with this. September 29th, quoted Dana White, says to MMA Junkie, Conor McGregor's the real deal. He's legit. He's a force I've never seen. Bigger than Brock Lesnar when he was here. Bigger than any of the fighters we've ever had. Yes, bigger than George St. Pierre. I've never seen anything like this. September 29. October 7, MMA Supremacy Twitter feed. If you were wondering, the projected pay-per-view buys based on trends for UFC 178 featuring Conor McGregor had it doing around 180,000 to 230,000 pay-per-view buys. October 6th, MMA payout, top 10 list of pay-per-view draws in UFC history. Number one, Brock Lesnar, over 1 million pay-per-views on average. Number two, George St. Pierre, 668,000 average. Number three, Rampage Jackson. So much for the theory that UFC fans don't like arrogant black fighters. Number four, Chuck Liddell. Number five, Tito Ortiz. Number six, Rashad Evans. Number seven, Lyoto Machida. Number eight, Randy Couture. Nine, Anderson Silva. 10, BJ Penn. You know what's missing from that list, Zach? What's glaringly missing? Besides Conor McGregor?
Ronda?
Any UFC champion. Any UFC champion. And you know what? Out of the top 10 ever in the UFC pay-per-view draws, only one is currently actively fighting, Lyoto Machida. Well, that's strange, right? I mean, how are we having the biggest guy ever, and he's bigger than the guy pulling the 1 million pay-per-views, and he's bigger than the number two guy at 668, and he's pulling 230,000 pay-per-views? Maybe they're off. Maybe they're off by half. Maybe it's 500,000 pay-per-views. Biggest ever? And then we get this other news also on MMA payout on October 6th. International growth is driving revenue for the UFC. All right. Pay-per-view revenues down. Why? We know. We've discussed many times. Show quality of shows low. Frequency of shows high. Average pay-per-view down. But overall, growth up. Boy, Dana White is looking like a genius. He's saying to us all this time, you guys in the media, you don't know jack squat. When he was interviewed by the Financial Times in March, he was saying, reporters are always saying we're dying. They don't know anything. We're growing. Turns out they are growing. UFC grew. Its overall business, according to MMA Payout, grew 50% because of the TV deals it brokered overseas. That's great. Forbes says on October 7th, the UFC is now one of their top 40 sports brands. Value, $1.65 billion, 115 times earnings before EBITDA, earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, amortization. What does that mean? That means that they're coming in with about $100 million in profit before they take taxes and depreciation and all those kind of different games go on there. $100 million after paying fighters, after all that. These are the guys that are fighting for $8,000 each. The company's making, you know, $8,000 to show, $8,000 to win, and the company's making $100 million before tax, after paying those guys out, after its promotional fees. $1.65 billion. That's huge. But do you know what Dana White said in March? And by the way, where Forbes got its numbers, I have no idea, because it's not publicly known normally, their numbers. But what did Dana White say in March? He said they're worth $3.5 billion. Yeah, that's what he told the Financial Times, $3.5 billion. So what have we got here, Zach? We've got this thing. We've got this compare and contrast. UFC is growing, pay-per-view shrinking. UFC is getting bigger. Its fan base is getting smaller. In the U.S., and they're trying to fan it out with interest. Its value's going up. No, its value's gone down. Its stars are bigger. No, its stars are smaller. We're in a situation, Zach, where we've got compare and contrast, opposite things being true at the same time. That's what I wanted to bring to the table tonight.
Right, and compare the fact that many of these fighters are tied in terms of financial interest to pay-per-view buys, pay-per-view points. They're not tied into international expansion. So once again, the managers and the agents, most of them are getting outflanked here. I mean, because if you're going to fight in the UFC, Kat Zingano fighting 9-9, you've got fighters saying, well, you can fight for 15-15 and get to pick your opponent, or you can fight for 30 and maybe 30, but we pick your opponent. I mean, it's just the manipulation is so skewed.
Well, yeah, and manipulation goes even further because they manipulate everything further with backroom bonuses. It's generous on the one hand, but it's a hell of a method of control because now you really got to be on their good favor to make any money, or you're not going to be, you know, in the club that gets the bonus.
Well, I would argue that, you know, all these figures that you see that the UFC brand being worth, what, $440 million for an estimate or whatever.
Yeah.
The UFC brand, the minute that Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta get out, the minute that the brand number goes way down. I mean, the brand number is what it is. It is only what you have when you're active. I mean, if they're not producing any shows, then what's the brand value? And really, they're declining their own brand value domestically while growing it internationally.
Right. Well, they're doing. I don't know if you want to make an analogy. It's almost like they're reducing their margins to increase their market share. Right. You know, they're willing to reduce their profits here to increase elsewhere. Is the rationale they tell you? And maybe that works, but there's a novelty factor. The first show in Mexico might be huge, but the 20th mediocre show in Mexico might not be. Right.
Right. But, you know, there is a risk to this.
Right. That's what I was trying to illustrate, is that fans will burn out everywhere eventually. It's not new. It's not novel to have the UFC visit your town when they've been there 10 times.
Just like it was in Sweden.
Right.
I mean, they ran a main event of Rick Story and Gunnar Nelson, for goodness sakes.
And they did well.
They did well by their standards, but right, compared to what they were doing with Gustafson.
Well, it wasn't a pay-per-view either. I mean, they got a strong gate. They had strong local interest. They did well in that regard.
Look, I'm not saying that they shouldn't have the right to do what they're doing. But there's a price to pay for it. And this is where I think Bellator will capitalize and will get a chance. Because I think there is a fatigue for UFC product. I don't think there's a fatigue for big fights. I don't think there's a fatigue for Bellator's MMA product, although their ratings are up and down like a yo-yo. I do think there is an opening domestically to put on big fights that's not UFC that will do okay.
Yeah, if they can get a big name, two big names, hopefully, from their perspective, to fight outside the UFC. I mean, you got to develop those names, and how is Bellator going to do that?
You get to a point where you run these cards where you only know 25% of the names on them.
Yep.
I mean, there's only so far you can go with that.
That's exactly right, and that's why even though the revenue is increasing, the concern is increasing at the same time.
When
right?
you think about what UFC is doing, it historically goes against everything, every principle, every historical trend that you've ever considered.
Well, let me ask you a question. All but one, and one that you raised in an article on Fight Opinion, which is there's one company that looked at this and took a turn, and the UFC has kind of gone in the same, started in the same direction. That's World Wrestling Federation or World Wrestling Entertainment. And they ditched the pay-per-view model and they went to the streaming web model. What do you think, Zach? I mean, we've talked about it. We've touched on it, but now as you sit here and we digest all this, does the UFC end up there?
I think they're going to have to. I think they may end up being forced to, let's say, 3 or 4 pay-per-views, and then the rest of it's going to be TV. But again, I would say that one of the big problems they have with the TV situation is, okay, you put on all these fights, you're going to do all these events, but the ratings have declined on Fox Sports 1 since they moved from Spike. What's the renewal going to look like in terms of fees? Because Fox Sports 1's going to obviously sit there and say, hey, look, your ratings have been good, but they haven't been great. So what is it that UFC is going to be able to do on the renewals rather than the expansion? I mean, yeah. Look.
And what are we seeing? What are we seeing out of Canada, right? The reports are coming out that their Canadian TV deal may be in jeopardy. And talk
right.
about international expansion.
Right. For those who don't know, the UFC show that aired on Rogers Sportsnet has been canceled, and there's a lot of trepidation that Rogers Sportsnet's not going to renew the UFC deal in Canada that's about to expire, and the question is, who picks it up, and if no one picks it up, does that mean Canada's only a Fight Pass country? And if that's where the things are going, that is a little dicey, because even WWE with their online network cut a conventional TV deal for Canadian audiences. So people who in Canada who want to watch WWE network, the streaming network, can watch it on a conventional platform. If UFC stuck with no platform, then what?
Indeed. Indeed. And that's not all that's going on, Zach. There's lots more. I know you wanted to touch on some more of the behind-the-scenes hijinks that have emerged from the Macau show.
Yeah. This Macau show the UFC ran a couple, I'd say a month ago or so, it's turned out to be a horrific disaster. First, they got in a lot of hot water because Dana White dismissed one of the judges after the first couple of bouts saying he sucked. And then, of course, UFC issued a press release going against Dana. So it's basically Dana going against Dana.
Yeah, and let's point out, there's no athletic commission in Macau, so UFC governed itself completely at this event.
Right. So Dana decided, the hell with the judges. I want the clean house right here, right now. And then it turns out that in their effort to show how tough they are with drug testing, including HGH testing, they ended up testing Michael Bisping and Kung Lee. It turns out they didn't use a WADA level test for the HGH sample. They took the HGH sample after the fight when you're not necessarily going to get an accurate reading of someone's levels.
Because of the exertion in the event and the adrenaline and all the other stuff, right?
And then they sent the sample. They sent one sample, not two samples, one sample, to a Hong Kong lab not accredited with WADA, so it doesn't do WADA standards. And when they tested the sample, they destroy the sample, allegedly, after 10 days. So there's no A sample and B sample for testing. There's no appeals process.
Wait a minute. Then they announced the suspension. And how long was it?
They initially announced 9 months, and they said, oh, no, it's 12 months.
When people said, why 9 months? What are you talking about? All of a sudden, the guy, the UFC official who had released the information, hadn't really released the information. It's really been 12. We don't know what happened with his 9, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So there's no appeals process.
Right. There's no appeal in the sense that literally you cannot retest. In a WADA certified lab, the samples are held for 10 years. And when you want to do that retest a sample, there's the blood is still there. You go back and you retest it. This one,
right.
They claim they've destroyed it. There is no retest. There's no way for checking for mistakes at all.
Right. So there's no court of arbitration for sport here. It's just UFC doing whatever the hell they want to do. And I would say Kong Lee and his camp have been very effective in the press of destroying the UFC's credibility for their own self-regulated drug testing.
Right. But now the UFC is saying, well, wait a minute, maybe we will let you appeal. We'll put some arbitrators together and we'll let them decide if we're doing what we're supposed to do. So the UFC is going to have appeal against itself.
How do you appeal if you can't do a B sample?
Well, it's really, to me, it's black or white. Did you follow the protocol then? No. If you didn't follow the protocol, it's no good. It's like, Braun in baseball.
Right, Ryan Braun.
Ryan Braun, he nailed him. They didn't follow the protocol. They had to let him go. Ryan Braun was guilty, as it turns out, because he got caught later. We found out, or he was on the list of users that was uncovered later. And
right.
He got busted. And, you know, Kung Lee, highly suspicious before the fight because he had that picture where he was completely jacked and ripped. And everybody's like, holy crap, Kung Lee must be on something. I mean, it was out there before the fight. He may be guilty of sin, but you don't have the evidence to hold him to it. You got to let him go.
And here's the part that really gets me. The process they used, the lab they used for this, UFC used for this drug test, it would not be acceptable by Nevada standards or California standards.
Right.
So they use the UCLA lab, or they use Quest. So you have Mark Ratner, who is supposed to oversee all these things. You've got Dana dismissing a judge, and then you've got them screwing up the HGH test. And of course, they're not doing it by the commission standards that they claim that they always claim when they run these shows that they're going to run by Nevada standards. They didn't do that here.
No. No, it seems like honestly, that show was like the way the regulation, self-regulation was run on that show by the UFC was just, it was a joke.
You know what? This is going to happen more often.
Well, maybe not. Maybe they learn from their lessons. I mean, one show like this might be enough to clean up a lot of problems.
But if you're running two shows in one day, and you're running all over the world, I mean, how much stress are you going to put on the regulators of people who you're putting in charge of these shows? That's a lot of work.
Yeah, well,
and things are going to fall through the cracks. And the question is, will UFC take responsibility? They never seem to take responsibility. They never do. Because, hey, look, they got their headline. You know, we busted this fighter for growth hormone. We're tough. Well, yeah. So what?
Well, it's like what they were talking about. Did you see Dana White's talking about domestic violence and their response? They always do. I mean, I don't think they understand. Their media strategy sometimes just it doesn't seem effective to me. Dana White says they do what's morally correct first and worry about the business second. But
no one believed that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it just didn't ring as true to the core. I mean, I just don't believe that they don't consider who the fighter is before they take their actions. And they got fighters that they're instating and then are banning for life, right? Because of domestic violence, then reinstating because the guy has to make a living, and then banning again when more evidence comes out. But I mean, how the hell do you ban a guy for life without getting all the evidence for life? Then without having him really cleared, but just finding out they can't prosecute, you're going to let him back in because a guy's got to make a living. That was literally the excuse to let him back in. And then, yeah. And then the wife, the girlfriend posts the video of him, allegedly acting crazy or, you know, erratic and with guns and stuff. And all of a sudden he's banned again. I don't, you know, for life. This guy was gone for life. How does he get back? It's crazy. It's not morally right to ban a guy for life before you have the evidence. You know, you want to talk about morally right? It's not, doesn't make any sense to handle it like they did afterwards.
Well, the reason they've been able to get away with this behavior for so long is because they've made money. They've made more money. They've made even more money. At some point, when they stop making money, maybe they'll start behaving. But I doubt it.
And now, they have Wanderlei Silva on the rampage out to get them. And the funny thing is, Wanderlei Silva is a guy who, in my mind, in many respects, very low credibility, because he ran out on a drug test and then tried to tell us it was diuretics. And he had all these that just seemed like very amateurish, stunts that he was pulling before that, trying to get PR, where he shows up with a camera and he's going to threaten Chael Sonnen at a fan mixer kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was just all, so he's a guy kind of, but he's making some points. You know, he's talking about, Hannon Buraya, and he's saying like, this guy's poor. How many times did he defend the belt? And he's poor. He's making no money. And he's like, these guys, now we know, if we believe Forbes, they're walking away with before tax and all, but $100 million. And they got, if what Wanderlei is saying is right, they have one of their champions living in a favela. You know, there's something to be said about what he's saying. I mean, you know, as much as he's kind of shot his credibilities in some areas, a lot of what he's saying is salient and on point.
Right, but that speaks to a quality or lack of quality of representation, and the fact that UFC has basically told fighters, we could find 100 different fighters anywhere we want to for one card. If you want to be on the card, you fight for cheap. And if you don't fight for cheap, the machine's going to move on.
Oh, speaking of which, you know who made them a lot of money that wasn't on that list, but made them a ton of money? Chael Sonnen. Right, he had the biggest live draw ever. His second fight with Anderson Silva, almost.
We're talking about a top 10 list that Sports Business Journal came up with of the all time top 10 UFC pay per views.
Yeah, and the MMA Payout was talking also about in one of those articles I referenced earlier about live draws and who had been their biggest live draws, and they thought that they could draw $6 million for the Mexico show if it was in the U.S. and MMA Payout's like, they've had two $6 million shows ever, and one of them was Chael Sonnen and almost $7 million against Anderson Silva. Like, the odds of a $6 million show, live gate, we're talking about, very low. But the thing is it was Chael Sonnen, because Chael Sonnen was a guy who increased his value with a brilliant, brilliant marketing and media strategy to be well beyond his fighting value. He wasn't as good of a fighter as he was as an interest drawer and a draw to the card. And he went and he had this article, I don't know if you saw it, where he sat down and he talked about, this is what you got to do to get people interested. When I wanted to fight Rashad Evans, I went and made a poster, and there was a big event coming up and I wanted to get on the event. So I asked Rashad, what are you doing this day? And I, on Twitter, and I put out the poster, and next thing you know, we're getting all this free publicity for this thing I made, and I got on the card and I made a lot of money that way. And the only guy who understands how to get publicity these days is Conor McGregor. Same guy we're talking about, Conor McGregor. Nobody else seems to get it. You want to be on the show? If it were me, I'd be on the Mexico show, and I'd be getting myself on that show. Well, I think some guys took it a little too literally, because what happened next? Conor McGregor went on Twitter and decided, hey, it seemed to me, it seemed like this. Chael Sonnen got himself on a big card by announcing he wanted to be on it. But he did it in a very clever way. If you looked at it, he made a poster, challenged Rashad, the two of them going back and forth. All of a sudden it was worthwhile. Conor McGregor goes and announces, hey, I'm fighting on the Mexico show. It's like he not even he understood exactly what Chael was talking about. I'm fighting on the Mexico show. And the UFC had to pull him back and say, no, you're not. You know why? Knucklehead, you're next in line for a title shot. Shut the hell up and take your title shot. They're going to do it in Ireland, and you're going to make a ton of money, and you're going to fill a soccer stadium in Ireland. Oh, man. Not even a guy who's as brash and media-friendly as Conor McGregor gets what Chael Sonnen did. But Chael Sonnen laid the blueprint, if you've got the personality and the wits about you, how to make yourself money.
He did, but here's the problem. You know, during his time period, they weren't running doubleheaders every weekend. How many shows are they running now, and how much have the fans tuned out?
Yeah, but you know what?
It's harder to get your message out now.
If Chael Sonnen was out there today talking about how Brazilian fighters think a bus is a donkey cart, or whatever he used to say to insult people and rile them up, the guy was a master. The guy would draw attention to himself. And, you know, maybe you can't draw a $7 million live gate because you don't have an Anderson Silva to fight, but you can increase your value that way. And sadly, that's from many people's perspective that come from pro wrestling, that's, you know, of course. But from myself, I come from more of a sports fan background. I wasn't a big wrestling fan at all. It's kind of sad that's the what fighters have to resort to in order to get paid value from the UFC.
I just feel like we're reaching this point where UFC really does have their wish of making everyone disposable. And it's hard. If you're a fan, it's really hard to stay focused on a product where the company books so many people that you know are here today, gone tomorrow.
UFC 177, you know the estimate for that?
125,000.
Yeah, 125,000. That was the card that fell apart, right?
That was the Joe Soto, TJ Dillashaw card in Sacramento.
Yeah, that card fell apart, but we definitely see that's the floor, 125,000. And if you have a double header of Ronda and Weidman, what is that, about
500,000?
Yeah, about 500,000. That's quite a bit different than a ceiling of a million.
Well, I think my final closing thought for the week, we'll talk about what's going on in Japan. There's going to be an Inoki show on New Year's Eve in Tokyo, probably headlined by Mirko Krokop, who's his new champion. And then you have the D promotion, which may run a small event at Saitama Super Arena. It just made me sad.
Missed the Pride days.
Well, you miss those days, but you don't miss what was really going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I saw something. Sherdog guys, they put out an article kind of summing up Wanderlei Silva's career. And his unbeaten streak in Pride, what did it reach? 18 fights, and it was in like 3 years. And Pride, that guy was – they were just putting guys through the ringer out there. And bizarre matchups and the like – It was definitely a Japanese flavored promotion,
right? But the point is they actually tailored some squashes so he could get easy wins.
Yep.
The UFC cannibalized it itself on that front.
They do, and some of it was easy wins. Some of it was to cater to local celebrities and local tastes and the like. You know, pro wrestlers getting in there because of the crossover between in Japan, especially pro wrestling and real fighting and the history, the intertwined history of the two in Japan. But yeah, you know, in some ways, the spectacular pageantry of a Pride show, we haven't seen that in so long, but in many ways, you know, good riddance.
The UFC does a terrible job of storytelling.
You think
they
so?
They never can control a narrative.
All right, so give me an example. I mean, they're trying to – let's just explore this. I know we're running a little low on time, but they do – like the pre-fight shows.
They get involved in these goofy things like Ronda versus Mayweather. They never control a narrative about a program. They always let the media or outsiders get in control of something, like Ultimate Fighter. I mean, Ultimate Fighter, what do you think of when you think of the Ultimate Fighter? You don't think about the best fighters in the world or the best upcoming stars in the world. You think about
nonsense at the house.
Bodily fluids.
Yeah, somebody spit on the butter or something like that.
You think about Karen Bryant talking about granny panties. I mean, just you know, I feel so frustrated right now. The UFC can make all the money in the world they want, but I feel they could do so much better.
Well, it is what it is. They've had a spectacular rise, and sometimes there's an adjustment. I think always there's an adjustment between being the young, growing upstart, young in terms of Zuffa ownership. There's a difference between that and becoming mature and staying up there and finding a way to adjust and getting past the dilemmas that come from your business model needing to change. And can you change on the fly? And we're seeing those pains right now.